the sound is a little bit better. Okay, being that it's almost Rosh Hashanah, discuss topic of Emunah in Hashem is certainly something worthwhile doing. It's always worthwhile doing, but especially before Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the concept of Kabbalas Malchus Shemayim. The easiest way to achieve Kabbalas Malchus Shemayim is by increasing our awareness of Hashem. How do we increase our awareness? In a very famous sefer called the Chayvus HaLevavos, he mentions that one very practical way of being able to recognize that there's a creator is looking properly, and I stress the word properly. It's a little bit of a training, and we'll soon see why. By looking properly into what's called quote-unquote nature, which is a little bit of a what we call a dirty word, so to speak, because nature was a Greek word that was coined in order to avoid facing the obvious, that there's a creator. So just nature. Who's nature? Nature. Now, the Chayvus HaLevavos says that there's a major challenge to humans, and that their mind develops very slowly. For instance, assuming, as I write in my book, the first chapter, we give an example of an alien from a totally different planet who has full seichel, shows up on Earth. Or, without getting so drastic, you could have a person who's locked up in a prison since he was a little kid, baby, never went outside, never saw sunlight even. And all of a sudden, after 20 years, let's say, he's outside, he'd be full of a million questions. What's going on over here? What's this? What's that? These trees, he sees the sunlight. Why? He wouldn't know anything. Amazing. He has a gazillion questions. I can tell you right now, not be satisfied with the answers. Certainly not the answers that some stupid guy are trying to give. Because in essence, they're saying, oh, accident. This happened to happen. It's a dream. See this in a little more detail. Let's understand this. Now today, by the way, a lot of the Goyim vaulting against the theory of evolution. In fact, this year, we know that President Bush was discussing about starting to teach in the schools about creationism, meaning that there's a creator. What's this nonsense evolution? What happened all of a sudden? Very simple. As time has gone on, they have discovered more and more major complexity in everything in the world. There's a book called Darwin's Black Box. The author, written less than 10 years ago, the author writes, Darwin knew nothing about the human self. Knew nothing about it. Today, the knowledge of scientists about the human self, which still there's much more to learn, they'll be the first one to admit that they don't know a lot. But they describe the human cell like a universe. It's a universe. Darwin's black box discusses there how Darwin never knew that the interior of the human body is a busier place than New York City, London, Mexico City, Tokyo, and Bombay all combined. Darwin had no idea that this close to 60 trillion cells in the human body that all work together in harmony. 60 trillion cells being controlled by the brain. Brain knows what's going on with all the cells, knows what's going on in the bloodstream. They have no idea how these things are regulated. How does the bloodstream know where to put all the different vitamins? Today we know that there's so many different vitamins. Let me read to you from a book, an amazing book, a terrific book that I just found recently. Of course, there's a reason I found it recently. It was just written in 2004. Maybe even in 2004. Let me tell you what it says. The book called What Darwin Didn't Know. A doctor dissects the theory of evolution. In the preface, before we get to what he writes about the human cell, he explains that he, for many years, 40 years he's in practice as a doctor, so he's not a youngster. He used to assume evolution because everyone else said so. Monkey see, monkey do. Everyone says evolution, must be evolution. He didn't really look into it, he just assumed. Probably everyone knows what they're talking about. It seems that he remarried when he was older, and it seems he married a religious lady, Christian, whatever. It's a very good book. And he challenged him. He said, evolution. And he, out of respect for his wife, he said, okay, I'll look into it a little more. And he started thinking about his own practice. Wait a minute, I'm a doctor. I haven't been thinking too well over the past few years. And I know the complexity of the human body. Come to think of it, it's so complicated. There's no way this could be an accident. See, in evolution, there's two types of evolution. One, for sure happens, and it's not really evolution. And one, never happens. There's microevolution, the I, and macroevolution, with an E. Microevolution means that within a certain species there's a tremendous amount of variation. That's obvious. In this classroom, you see microevolution. 27 individuals here who don't, well, actually, they're one set of twins, but otherwise, no one looks alike. Hey, you see that? It's changed, it's different. For many years, there was only green peppers. Next thing you know, red peppers. Then, a few years later, all of a sudden, start seeing orange peppers, yellow peppers. Before you guys were born, they didn't have that. Many years ago, they didn't have such a variation of colors. But if you work on it long enough, possible that the color totally changed. Nonsense. Is this still a pepper? Absolutely. Are there changes? Are there variations within the pepper? Of course. And the different sizes. Every pepper is a slightly different size than every, you know. Pepper, it's still a pepper. You know what would be macroevolution if all of a sudden peppers started growing into cucumbers or into an apple? All of a sudden, they're planting pepper seeds and apples are coming out. Oh, that's macroevolution. But don't worry, never happened, never will happen. Not only has a pepper never ever turned into an apple. No other species ever changed into another species. Never has been shown, it has never happened. Now, boy, what about the fossils? Oh, I'm glad you brought it up. On the contrary, the fossils show just the opposite. Never is there a link in the fossils between one species and another. The huge gap of all the intermediary steps. Back to the author, Simons. And he knew that there's so many complex steps in every process that goes on in the human body. And he knew that there's never anything called macroevolution. There's a scientist that told me personally that he's been studying in science labs for many, 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 many years. He works with bacteria. Bacteria reproduce 72 times. There are 72 generations in a 24-hour period. Bacteria. 72 generations. In humans, to have 72 generations take about 1,500 years. That's how many generations there are in one day with bacteria. Says they're in the laboratories, they zap all the bacteria and they splice them and they shoot them and they boil them and they freeze them, whatever they can to them. Never has a bacteria of one species turn into a new species. Trying to make it mutate. So, Rabbi, what about mutations? Mutations are always bad. Always end up messed up. And never have they ever caused a mutation to change from one species to another. And that's exactly what they were trying to do here. In the lab, they were zapping and electricity, you name it, they're destroying this bacteria from head to toe, trying to get it to become something else. They have 72 generations in one 24-hour period to work with. So over the years, it's like, who knows how many years in human generations. He said they've been doing this for the longest time, and never does it ever change into another species. It always stays. There's variations. Of course there's variations. But never something new. It says in the preface to this book, Darwinism is a magic trick performed far enough away from the audience to dazzle them until someone starts handing out binoculars. The advances in the life sciences that are recounted in this book, Mr. Simons is handing out a great pair of binoculars and making Darwinism's sleight of hand plain to see. Darwinism, though always a trick, has in the past been a remarkably successful trick. This book, What Darwin Didn't Know, shows why the Darwinian magic gig is now over. All you have to do, I mean, the book is over 300 pages, but let's say we just turn to the page that talks about the human cell. Every cell contains an estimated 1 billion, with a B, compounds. Now wait a second. 60 trillion cells in a human. It's a lot of cells. That means that, as someone pointed out, it's got to be pretty small. Yet in one cell is 1 billion compounds. A compound means more than one chemical joined with another chemical. It means that at least 2 billion elements, was compounds. Compound is more than one element. A tiny microscopic cell. Now, I don't know how you can put it in a microscopic. I don't know how you can put almost anything in a microscopic cell so tiny. No problem. There's 1/1 billion compounds. Among these compounds are approximately 5 million different kinds of proteins. 5 million, and each protein is majorly complex. These proteins are highly varied in shape and size. They can have more than one function or electrical charge. They all know where to go, how to get there, when to act, how fast to react, and when to stop. Nearly every chemical reaction is helped along by one or more of the 3,000 plus different enzymes. Some of these chemical reactions, which are very complex, take only a millionth of a second. Millionth of a second. The nucleus of each cell contains 23 pairs of very complex chromosomes with 100,000 genes that can be further broken down into 6 billion chemical bases. In the human cell, these bases, these chemical bases, tell the cell everything it needs to know about growing up, surviving, fighting, fleeing, digesting food, breathing, thinking, pumping blood, eliminating weights, perpetuating the species. These human cell is a miracle beyond all miracles. Is very complex and possible to explain as an accident. Of course, most textbooks make the cell seem like some, little plastic box with some little gelatin in it, and a few pieces of fruit floating around inside. That's a typical textbook, the way they describe it. And it says in there, bring certain ribosomes and mitochondria, and that's it. Throw a few fancy words, that's the human cell. Slightly underselling what is really going on in the human cell. When he hears what we just described, immediately understands that. What accident? We really can rest our case right here. For a regular person who's honest, we basically could close the case. You can't have something so complex with billion compounds and 3,000 plus enzymes and proteins all working together. Tremendous harmony, making awesome chemical reactions, which in many books it states that scientists cannot duplicate such chemical reactions. 1 millionth of a second, it's ludicrous. It's total insanity for someone who is not biased to dream that this could be the result of anything but an amazing, amazing creator. Amazing. We don't know everything about the human cell. Far from it. Far from it. The scientists will be the first to admit they're just beginning to discover things. Electron microscope has not been around that long. And the atom, until recently, took a while till they discovered that there's an electron, a proton, a neutron. Now they found out that in those electrons and in those protons and in those neutrons are more subatomic particles. And one day they're going to find out that in those subatomic particles are even more subatomic particles. They don't have a clue what's going on. They really know, they know so little. The super force, they call it. Super force. Super force. Holding together the bond in an atom. How did that happen? That there's a super force. That super force there. Where did the glue come from? And it's invisible. The glue's invisible. It's an atom bomb, exactly. The force that holds together the nucleus is has the energy of the atomic bomb. Literally. Where will that energy come from? With that major, major bond. To happen. It's a whole book. We could talk about. I want to go back to this guy that's in the prison cell till he was 20. He starts asking some very simple questions. I spoke recently about a banana. All fruits and vegetables start off green. I don't care what color it ends up, but they all start off green. Every single one. There's no exception to the rule, period. As they turn ripe, they start changing color. It would almost seem the fruits or vegetables know somehow that there are humans that can see. There are humans with stomachs that are going to eat them. But how could an accident know that a human has eyes and is able to tell the difference in color so that it'll be able to tell when it's ripe? Can an accident know that there are humans around? No, I don't think a banana knows that there are humans around. It sure looks like it does. Because as the banana turns ripe, it's all very green, right? You try to open a banana when it's very green, it's come out impossible. Very difficult. You have to get a sharp knife and you try to cut off the peel and it's like stuck to the banana. The banana itself is dry like anything. No taste. It's hard. It's actually not ready to eat. As the banana starts turning ripe, which in itself is amazing because it's not even in the ground anymore. It's turning slowly yellow. That's an accident. You're right. And as it's turning ripe, slowly but surely starts to develop a sweet smell, a sweet taste. The more yellow it gets, as it loses totally its green complexion, it turns totally yellow, that's the sign it's ripe. And guess what? All of a sudden, it's easy as can be to peel the banana. That means the banana actually cares about me. So that's interesting. Yeah, you have an accent that cares about you. Wants to make sure you don't get a stomach ache. It cares. You should not eat it when it's ripe. Unripe, excuse me. So it does not open up easy. Very difficult to open. Very, very difficult. It's terrible. Does not have a sweet smell anyways. Turns ripe. For humans, for human consumption, all of a sudden the color changes. Here I am, not camouflaging myself amongst the green leaves anymore, changing color. Can be very easily. Well, I'm ready, I'm ripe, it has a sweet scent. Soft, sweet, delicious. Same thing is with many, many, many other all that change color. Red, delicious apple with the little dimples on it. Totally green when it started. A red tomato, sharply deep red, delicious ripe tomato, 2 weeks before, was totally unripe green tomato. Not fit really for eating. As it change, as it gets riper and riper, changing colors to tell you, I know that there are humans. I know there are eyes. I know you can tell color differences. I care about your stomach, and I know what's going on in your stomach. And I know when it's not ripe, it's not good for you. When it is ripe, it is good for you. Pretty amazing that an accent should know all about me. I wonder who told that the vegetables that there are humans around. There's a major plan going on here with a major planner. Bat has radar. The Gulf War, second one that we just had, used dolphins that also have radar. And their radar shoots out 900 pulses per minute. 12 to 13 per second. It's like shooting out so fast. Now, it's one thing, okay, you're shooting it out, but it's bouncing back a lot. If they know how to read what bounced back, know how. So does a bat. A bat is a little slower, only 200 per minute, or 3 per second. Radar, it's an accident. Radar that works better than any machine that the Navy could make. So what did they use in the oceans to avoid any mines a few years ago only? It was my mission a few years ago. Oh, machines are good. Nah, not good enough. I'll use a dolphin. Accent has a better machine than you could make yourself. Couldn't the Navy make a better machine than the dolphin? No. I mean, it could, but it would be astronomically expensive. It's good enough to use a dolphin. I don't know if they could or can't, but it's irrelevant. You're dealing with a lot of human lives here. Don't worry, you can trust the dolphin. It'll know if there's something further down in the water or not. The woodpecker is banging on the wood at 20 bangs per second. 20 bangs per second. Should give you a nice concussion. If you're banging your head against wood 20 bangs per second. Oh, for a million years, they were dropping, they were getting knocked out. All the woodpeckers were on the floor there with concussions. Forgot the food they needed. Because they're just banging a few minutes, they're looking for food. There's food in the tree. So see about it. But I don't know, they all died out because they all got concussions. That's partial. So they davened to Hashem, police. Don't you see what's happening? And lo and behold, a cushion came. His shock absorbers that absorb the banging. Boy, how lucky can you get? Okay? So it's able to withstand all the banging on the tree. Finally, it actually makes a hole. We won't go into how they have totally different feet than any other species, so they can hold on tight to the bark of the tree. Most birds don't hold on to the flat surface bark of a tree. They hold on to branches. Woodpeckers' feet are differently set up because they need to hold on to a flat surface and hold tight while they're banging. For many years, they kept falling off because the feet weren't good. They start davening. Shem, how do you expect us to hold on to this bark with the feet you gave us? Could you please, like, change it around a little bit? Make some evolution, maybe, or something. Finally, between the shock absorbers and the different feet, they're able to make a hole in the wood. Mazel tov. There's one problem. They have no way of knowing exactly where are those worms that they're looking for. There's a certain worm that's in the bark. So they finally got that hole. Hashem, it's a big tree. How am I supposed to know where to make the hole? Wait a minute. I'm going to starve to death till I finally find them. Says, relax. I'm going to make a very amazing accent for you. You're going to have an unbelievable tongue that works totally different than any other tongue system. Wraps around the skull. The tongue is totally different setup than all tongues. It goes around the back of the head. It's a very long thing. It's like anchored on top of the head. It goes all the way down and out. It's a totally different thing. Very, very long. Extremely long. But that doesn't help. Oh. So here's what happens. It's the tongue and it sticks it through the hole that it made. And then inside where the worm made a hole and dug in, so to speak, in the tree, there's a hole from the worm. Okay. So he finds the hole. It goes up. There's probably a worm up there. If he feels a hole, that means there's probably a worm up there. Or else how did the hole get there? Fine. Tongue touches the worm. Scratch my back. I said, the worm's wondering what's touching me. If the tongue touches, mazel tov, so what about it? How can I get the worm into woodpecker's mouth? For many years, they were dying of starvation. It didn't help. Avin and David. And Hashem made two. They got so much. Now I'm going to give you two extra things. Two. The tip of this amazing tongue, like an arrow, chop, goes in. It's cool, like a barbed tongue. But just to help that out a little more, it has a sticky mucus that helps pull the worm out as well. Special sticky mucus. That this is totally out of his mind. We didn't discuss a million different things. I could stand here for days and days and days, literally, and go on and on and on and on. Why don't we recognize this? Says the Chayyim Zavav, is because you were not born in a prison. You went out, and slowly but surely, as a little kid, you saw trees, and you heard about woodpeckers, and you know, you went to school when you were a little kid, and the science teacher told you about a human cell, and showed you this very simplistic pictures about it, you know, and you didn't know that there's 270 million eyes, receptors in your eyes that accept the color, and you didn't know nothing. You didn't know there were 60 trillion cells with 1 billion compounds in it. That are doing major, major difficult chemical reaction in 1 millionth of a second. This doctor is about 300 pages. He goes through every single part of the human body and one by one shows possible for all those steps to work together. Each step knows about the other step. My book, in the first chapter, I talk about this at length. Through photosynthesis, we go through the orange tree. The whole process of a tree. We walk outside and we see a tree. Oh, a tree, yeah. Watch how simple it is to see that there's a creator. It's a tree and a wood. Disagreement there, is there? Do we plant one little seed? It's not wood, it's a seed. Earth, is there wood in the earth? Not the last time I looked. Is there wood in the rain that's coming down? I don't think so. How did the sunlight? You ran out of elements that make the tree. Time? You want to sit down on a bench made out of time? You have water, sunlight, a pit, and earth. Where did the wood come from? Now, could you ask a more elementary question than that? Do you have to be Albert Einstein to think of this one? The answer is, though, we have one problem. We never thought about this question. No. And right there. That's amazing. How did that happen? I didn't ask you, by the way, where the oranges are. I don't see any oranges in there. Is there an orange in the pit? Open the pit. Is there any orange in there? No, I don't think so. Oh, and by the way, on one tree that grew from one pit, there's thousands of pits. Well, that's a nice magic trick. Dollar, I'll turn into $10,000. I like that one. You can't do it, that's the problem. But an accident could do it. An accident? Oh, what accidents could do, you'd be amazed. Get in the ground, into earth, there rains water, there's sunlight. How does it change totally to totally different things? Where's the wood? How in the wood? Where did the wood come from? Very simple question. There's organisms in the earth. So what? First of all, we gotta know where those came from. And how do they know what to do with the seed when it goes in there? This is mind-boggling. Blind, these scientists. Unbelievable. That's why scientists are getting very frustrated. What type of nonsense is this? To say an accident? What stupidity is this? Walking around with eyes closed and saying, where's the light? Eyes. Our problem is that we're young, so we see trees and pit, yeah, oranges, sure. By the time we're old enough to think, we have long stopped thinking. Baruch Hashem, when I was young, I was trained by a Rebbe who major expert at this, with the Miller Zitzel. And he taught us how to look and to see what's obvious. There are many books today written by a group called the Intelligent Design Group that says everywhere you look in this world, it's yelling top of its lung. Major, massively intelligent design and designing me. With amazing complexities, literally miracles. Caterpillar lays eggs and it produces more caterpillars. The caterpillar literally cannot die. It spins a cocoon around itself. That cocoon is a massive glob of like jelly. That is the caterpillar that has totally rotted away. You take a cocoon and you puncture it, out will ooze the cook. But the cook is alive. I once sprayed Raid on a cocoon. The cocoon, which was jelly at that point, started wiggling. It's live jelly, which a week ago was a caterpillar, which a week from now will be a totally new thing called butterfly. The butterfly doesn't reproduce, they die. They just die. Caterpillar. There's a book called this. So instead of calling it nature, they have a fancier word. It's called, it's a metamorphosis. A metamorphosis, if you look up the definition of a metamorphosis, metamorphosis is basically, term metamorphosis has been given to miraculous change of form that takes place in most insects. It's a fancy way of saying a miracle. It's called a, what's the word that he's using here? Miraculous change. Miracle. Miracles don't happen all over the place by accident. They don't happen anywhere, miracles. Hashem showed with these miracles. He made these things on purpose so that we could see it and recognize it. If we so wish to do, if we're willing to let ourselves recognize Hashem. The intelligent design group of scientists are finally saying, he's staring us in the face. Hashem's mom is staring us in the face all over, wherever we look. It's high time that we stop ignoring him. There's a link